Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. A lot has changed since our last show. Today, we'll have some important updates for you on new county health orders allowing access to many recreational sites, including parks, golf courses, and beaches locally, with some limits, though, to protect the public health. Hear updates on local COVID-19 cases here in East County, and then we'll have details on Governor Gavin Newsom's plans for reopening California businesses over several phases in the coming weeks and months. Plus, learn about prospects for reopening public schools as early as midsummer to help students overcome lost learning time. Our reporting team has taken a look this week at how the pandemic and shutdowns are impacting vulnerable populations locally, including immigrants, refugees, and homeless people on the streets in East County. We'll also have a report on the devastating impacts of COVID-19 in nursing homes nationwide. On our health report, hear about disturbing new findings about blood clots caused by COVID-19 that are creating strokes in young adults. Plus, we'll have some important news for business owners on a new round of SBA loans at the federal level, as well as a new county loan program to help local businesses. Then on our agricultural report, hear how some local farmers and ranchers are creating new business models while stay-home orders prevent farm visits, including one local ranch now offering a Zoom a Zoo program to liven up corporate virtual meetings or entertain those homebound kids for birthday celebrations. But many other local farmers are struggling without revenues as the shutdown drags on. The county fair at Del Mar has been canceled due to the pandemic, so local kids raising livestock for the fair will instead be auctioning off their animals online, and we'll have details. From Public News Service, hear about postcards for seniors that the state of California is sending out with some helpful resources for those who are homebound. On People Power, hear about a Produce for Pandemic program set up by a Rotary Club in La Mesa. Students at state universities and colleges are asking for some help, and we'll have details why from California News Service. And then from Public News Service, we'll have some national news highlights, including President Donald Trump's claims on the source of the coronavirus in Wuhan, which contradict our nation's own intelligence sources. Plus, hear why some legal immigrants are not eligible for stimulus funds and other top national stories. On Green Scene, hear why Southern California's mountain lions just got some important protections that the state hopes will help them come roaring back. And finally, as we all hunker down here at home amid the pandemic, we have some home safety tips for you to keep in mind. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Starting May 1st, a new county health order eases many restrictions on recreational use. All county parks will be reopened, but with 50% parking capacity for social distancing. Members of the same household can now picnic or participate in sports or other activities in parks, but gatherings are still prohibited. Recreational boating can resume at local lakes, bays, and the ocean. However, passengers must be in the same household. Golf courses can also reopen, but golf carts are still not allowed. Courses must provide physical distancing and conduct temperature screenings on all golfers. The county allowed beaches to open this past week for swimming, surfing, kayaking, and solo paddling, as well as walking and jogging along the shoreline, though beach parking lots remain closed and beachgoers are not allowed to place items on the sand, such as towels or chairs. State and county orders prohibiting gatherings and requiring social distancing of 6 feet between non-household members remain in place, and the county has extended its stay-home order indefinitely, though exceptions are allowed for essential activities, and that includes exercising. Masks are required now in all public places in San Diego County within 6 feet of others, as well as in stores and on public transportation. Governor Gavin Newsom has issued an order closing beaches in Orange County after crowds there defied social distancing requirements. But he opted to allow other beaches statewide to remain open, provided the rules are followed. The governor's decision came after officials, including San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner and Supervisor Diane Jacob, urged him to give regional officials regulatory flexibility. Supervisor Jacobs said San Diego's reopening of beaches has been executed successfully, adding, "Our residents did everything we asked." Now, local cities across our region might have their own restrictions on parks and beaches, so you should check the rules with your city before visiting those. Local tribes have not yet announced when golf courses on their reservations may open, so be sure to call for updates. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says the county eased some restrictions because our region has met 4 of the 5 federal criteria as well as state recommendations for reopening. But if cases spike, state and local officials caution, the restrictions could be reimposed. To date, over 3,500 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed in our region, and as of Friday, when this show was recorded, 124 San Diegans have died of the coronavirus. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
98 new cases of COVID-19 were reported over the weekend by San Diego County Health and Human Services. The jump follows the trend in several cities where rallies were held to end shutdowns, with most protesters not wearing masks and ignoring social distancing. The sheriff arrested several local demonstrators over the weekend for violating stay-at-home orders. The disease has spread rapidly in East County, where El Cajon now has 181 cases, La Mesa 71, Santee 29, and Lemon Grove 28 cases. In the unincorporated areas of East County, there are 22 cases in Lakeside, 14 in Ramona, and 4 in Alpine. Ranchita, Boulevard, Potrero, and Julian each have 2 cases. Borrego Springs, Descanso, and Tecate have at least 1 case each. Testing for COVID-19 has ramped up locally. Drive-through testing sites are available in San Diego, South Bay, and North County, but so far not in East County. Since April 13th, nearly 20,000 tests have been administered across San Diego County, and 6.6% were positive. Health officials warn that defying public orders will only prolong quarantine requirements to slow spread of the disease. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Low-risk businesses and public spaces may be able to open with modifications in weeks, not months, California Governor Gavin Newsom said in a briefing on April 28th. He laid out a detailed plan to reopen the state in 4 phases, with 6 key indicators that must be met in order to lift restrictions imposed during the COVID-19 health emergency. California is currently in Phase 1, during which testing and hospital capacity need to increase substantially. Employers should make plans to let sick workers stay home and make changes to workspaces to reduce the risk of spreading the virus. Phase 2 would allow lower-risk businesses to reopen, such as retail, offices that can't operate remotely, and manufacturing, as well as some public spaces. But it won't be business as usual just yet. Retail may be limited to curbside pickup initially, and restaurants may be required to have tables 6 feet apart with servers wearing masks or maybe gloves. Schools could also reopen as early as July or August, with social distancing and other steps to protect students and staff. Child care centers could also reopen as workers return to work. Phase 3 would reopen some higher-risk places such as gyms, salons, movie theaters, churches, and hair salons, provided risk can be reduced. Sports could resume without live audiences during Phase 3. However, Phase 3 and 4 reopenings likely won't happen for months, the governor says. The 4th and final phase would allow venues that attract large crowds to reopen, such as stadiums, convention centers, sporting events, and large concert venues. These will stay closed until treatments for the coronavirus are developed, or until there's a vaccine or widespread herd immunity. The 6 indicators the state will use to determine when to lift restrictions include availability of testing for the virus, protections for vulnerable populations, including the elderly and homeless, adequate hospital capacity, development of treatments or a vaccine, and the ability to reimpose restrictions if there's a surge in cases. Now, in San Diego, many major events for the next few months have already been canceled, including Comic-Con and other large conventions, the Pride Parade, all professional sporting events, and big concerts. Cities or counties could have stricter requirements than the state, but they would not be able to have laxer standards for reopening businesses and public spaces, the governor says. Some rural counties have pushed to reopen sooner in places with lower rates of infection. Several rural counties in Northern California have the lowest rates in the state, with death rates several times lower than some dense urban areas, the Sacramento Bee reports. In San Diego County, COVID-19 cases have occurred in even the most rural towns, although the rates of confirmed cases in many of our region's rural, mountain, and desert communities, as well as on Native American reservations, are generally lower than in urban areas. But little, if any, testing has been done in some of those places. The closure of businesses and public places has sparked protest rallies. However, Governor Newsom indicates that decisions will be driven by science, with public safety at the forefront. He says, "Politics will not drive our decision-making. Protests will not drive our decision-making." The governor cautions that pulling back too quickly could start a second wave that could be even more damaging than the first, as happened in cities that reopened too fast during the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. Doing so could undo progress made, the governor warns, delaying a return to normalcy even longer.
This is Jonathan Getz with an education report. During a briefing on April 28th, Governor Gavin Newsom suggested that California's schools may reopen in July or August, provided key steps are met. Schools have been closed since mid-March due to the COVID-19 pandemic, impacting over 6 million students statewide. The governor says, "We recognize there's been a learning loss because of this disruption," adding, "We're concerned about the learning loss even into the summer." Newsom outlined four phases to reopen the state, which is currently in phase one. More testing and adequate hospital space are needed to advance to the second phase. Phase two could potentially include reopen plans to reopen K through 12 schools for either summer school programs or an earlier start to the school year that normally begins around the beginning of September. State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Thurmond, says that reopening schools sooner could help address equity issues facing the most vulnerable students and begin recovering learning losses, as well as helping parents who must return to work. But, he says, major questions must be answered for early reopening to work. First and foremost, he asks, can this be done in a way that protects the health and safety of our students, teachers, and school staff? Thurmond also wants fiscal implications considered, since school districts would need more money to comply with new mandates. For example, he says, social distancing in schools may require smaller class sizes, but schools are going to need additional resources to make it happen, including the possibility of hiring more teachers. Teachers and staff would also need personal protection equipment and cleaning supplies to sanitize schools, he notes. Extending the school year could also trigger renegotiation of union contracts, and could pose problems for districts that rely on summer school for remedial classes. State Superintendent Thurmond assures that his office will work with the governor's office, State Board of Education, legislature, Department of Finance, as well as leaders in health, education, and unions statewide. "Together, we will create a path forward that works for all students," he concludes.
A virus doesn't discriminate. But structural inequalities already in place can be exacerbated in a crisis, with groups already in a precarious position left more vulnerable than ever. Among those at-risk groups in San Diego County are immigrants and refugees. According to advocates working with immigrant and refugee communities, their top concerns are food insecurity and lack of resources. The first wave of panic buying left many immigrants foraging in empty stores on limited budgets, after affluent people with access to early information wiped the stock out. Elizabeth Liu, founder of the nonprofit Nile Sisters, told East County Magazine, "By the time information reached the immigrant and refugee community, most of the stores were empty. That left them lacking vital supplies as the quarantine took effect. Another major struggle has been closure of schools, which in some cases also meant losing meals provided for children, although some schools have continued to offer food for students. While nonprofits have tried to scale up food banks and meal services, demand is so high that many are struggling to meet it," says Liu. "The size of many immigrant families, especially Middle Eastern families, is adding to the strain," according to Dilquaz Ahmed at License to Freedom, an organization based in El Cajon. She says many households have more than five children to care for, in addition to adult extended family members, all in the same residence. Ahmed says the limited economic opportunities in El Cajon had families struggling before the crisis even began. Now, many who managed to find work before have been laid off during the pandemic. Some women who wear hijabs fear discrimination if they seek jobs outside of the East County community that has become an enclave for Middle Eastern immigrants. Lou says, adding that language barriers and feeling uncomfortable driving on freeways also limits their economic opportunities. Language barriers have also limited families' ability to access resources. Before the pandemic, people were able to show up to the county offices in person with an advocate or an interpreter to assist them. Now, with caseworkers working remotely, it's been more difficult for many English language learners to communicate with them by phone and email, according to Ahmed, and some don't even have internet access. Lack of communication to those vulnerable communities has also meant that many are not applying for resources that they may qualify for. A member of the City Heights Town Council Board, Shantae Jones, says a leader in the Somali Business Association is helping assist Somali business owners apply for grants and loans. She explained, he's been trying to help people who are English as a second language to fill out these small business grants because a lot of them don't even know that they exist or they don't know how to find them. Immigrant-owned businesses that are not part of a business association, such as a chamber of commerce, may not have outside help to fill out long and often convoluted forms. In addition, many immigrants are barred from receiving federal help like stimulus checks. Millions of tax-paying immigrants who are green or white card holders do not qualify for the one-time $1,200 payment. Even American citizens married to an immigrant without a Social Security number are not allowed to get their own stimulus checks under the Trump administration's restrictions. Some state and local governments are trying to assist vulnerable communities, including undocumented immigrants, some of whom are laid off but not eligible for unemployment. Others are working in essential businesses but lack money for child care with schools closed. Governor Gavin Newsom unveiled a plan recently to give $500 to undocumented immigrants, but that's far less than other Americans have received who are impacted by COVID. Beyond worries about paying rent and other bills, many undocumented individuals do not have health insurance, and they're worried that they will not be able to access health care if they get sick. Many uninsured individuals are essential workers more at risk of contracting coronavirus because of their jobs in health care, grocery stores, and other critical community positions. Estela de los Rios at CSA, an El Cajon-based nonprofit, has also heard from newly arrived Middle Eastern immigrants who have yet to receive a Social Security number, so they are unsure what resources they qualify for, despite having legal status. She says, a lot of our undocumented communities feel like they're not going to be receiving any assistance, and that puts them in a very, very vulnerable and susceptible position. According to San Diego City Council President and congressional candidate Georgette Gomez, 5% of San Diego County residents are unauthorized immigrants. She was among several city leaders who sent a letter to Governor Newsom urging him to set up the fund for undocumented immigrants. No East County leaders signed on to that. The only county supervisor to publicly address the needs of the immigrant community is Nathan Fletcher, who represents some central San Diego neighborhoods. De Los Rios is hopeful that local organizations and government relief programs will make the resources available without Social Security numbers. For now, however, the resources for many immigrants, even those here legally, are severely limited compared to benefits for citizens. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region. Although the city of San Diego has opened up the convention center to help homeless people downtown, homeless people on the streets in East County are facing dire situations. East County Magazine reporter Jake Zalaki photographed homeless camps remaining in Spring Valley and Lakeside, also speaking with Mike, a homeless man who has been sleeping in front of a closed storefront in La Mesa. Mike says things are different now during the pandemic, adding, everyone's afraid of the homeless. He typifies many homeless individuals in East County with nowhere to go. The recent halt of new intakes at the East County Transitional Living Center in El Cajon is only one example of doors closing to homeless people. Mike told East County Magazine, we really can't take showers anymore. Just a block from the closed Wells Park in El Cajon, you can see almost 20 homeless camped in a parking lot outside the neighborhood healthcare facility. A staffer at Supervisor Diane Jacobs' office indicated that the county is working with homeless individuals in unincorporated areas, primarily Spring Valley and Lakeside. Since late January, 177 homeless people have been placed by the county into hotels, and 82 tents have been removed. But in East County, many remain unsheltered, as is obvious from driving past areas long frequented by the homeless. Some, like Mike, say they feel safer on the streets than in crowded shelters. San Diego had the fourth highest homeless population in the nation in 2018. While the city of San Diego has recently taken emergency steps, including opening up the convention center to house homeless people, the county thus far has no homeless shelters in the unincorporated areas, despite high homeless populations in unincorporated areas, such as Spring Valley and Lakeside. The city of El Cajon did just approve $1 million to help residents, including homeless people. El Cajon's homeless response team will seek to provide additional shelter space, motel vouchers, and a safe parking program, transportation to regional homeless services, and more. El Cajon is also providing rent relief and has asked landlords not to evict tenants during the COVID-19 crisis to prevent even more people from becoming homeless. But that won't help homeless people in neighboring cities such as La Mesa, where Mike says he's facing challenges to get food during shelter-in-place orders. He says some retailers and fast food restaurants have refused to serve him because he wasn't wearing a mask, while other customers without masks were being served. One restaurant denied him service because he doesn't have a credit or debit card, since the restaurant is not accepting cash during the pandemic. Still, Mike says he has been through worse, and he's been heartened by support of many members in the community. He says one woman gave him a tent, and a construction worker brought him a full lunch when he was hungry, bringing tears to his eyes amid these troubling times. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
COVID-19 is having a devastating impact on nursing home patients. Nationwide, thousands of nursing home-related deaths have occurred. The New York Times reports in a recent article that has called the facilities death pits. In mid-April, the California Health Department for the first time released statistics on coronavirus cases in nursing facilities. Locally, the hardest hit area is El Cajon, where at least 42 patients have been diagnosed with the virus in 3 nursing homes. Staff cases have been reported at 10 facilities in San Diego County, including La Mesa and Lemon Grove nursing homes in East County. The state has only disclosed cases at nursing homes and does not include other senior facilities such as retirement centers or assisted living homes. COVID-19 public health orders in California prohibit visitors at such facilities, leaving elderly patients to contend with the mental stress of isolation in addition to any physical or cognitive impairments. This also adds stress on families and caregivers. Many employees at nursing homes don't have the option of avoiding contact with patients who are ill, yet nursing homes and other senior care facilities often don't have enough masks or other personal protection equipment, according to Mark Parkinson, president of the American Healthcare Association. In addition, Parkinson says federal health authorities have designated nursing homes and long-term care facilities as lower priorities than hospitals, resulting in longer turnaround times for test results that could slow the spread of COVID-19. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report from East County Magazine on some disturbing new findings about COVID-19 effects, including blood clots, debilitating strokes in young people, and long-term damage in some survivors. The novel coronavirus is now the second leading cause of death in the United States, topped only by heart disease. During the second week of April, it killed over 12,000 people nationwide, 10 times more than the flu and pneumonia combined. Over 50,000 Americans have died from COVID-19, or roughly the same number killed during the Vietnam War. COVID-19 is airborne, spreading more easily than the flu. The virus remains in the air for several hours and can survive on some surfaces for days. Doctors in the Emory University Health System discovered blood clots in over 20% of their COVID-19 patients. Three major U.S. health institutions are preparing to publish a report documenting similar findings, the Washington Post reports. Doctors around the world are starting to see an alarming rate of severe strokes in patients in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who test positive for COVID-19, including some who had not shown symptoms initially. In addition to a death rate 10 times worse than the flu, COVID-19 is also causing serious and often permanent long-term damage to some of the survivors. Some suffer from post-intensive care syndrome, resulting in cognitive, physical, and psychological problems in up to 80% of all critical care survivors. A third of these patients who were on ventilators may never be able to return to work. The disease, first diagnosed just 4 months ago, can cause long-term damage to the brain, heart, kidney, and other organs. Some hospitals are also reporting cases in patients thought to have recovered, although it's unclear whether the disease lies dormant and can reactivate over time, or whether the patients failed to develop immunities and contracted COVID-19 a second time. The new and disturbing facts about COVID-19 come amid increasing pressure to reopen businesses and public spaces, but doing so too soon can have disastrous consequences. We can take a lesson from history. The Spanish influenza epidemic of 1918 prompted St. Louis to cancel its victory parade after World War I, but Philadelphia refused to cancel its parade, a decision that contributed to over 12,000 deaths in Philadelphia over the next 6 weeks. St. Louis, by contrast, lost only 700 people to the Spanish flu during the same time frame. This shows how mass gatherings of people can accelerate spread of a virus, a fact that public health officials must keep in mind when balancing demands for reopening the economy and recreational sites against the need to protect the public health and save lives.
This is Jonathan Getz from East County Magazine on KNSJ with some important news for local businesses that have shut down or suffered losses due to the pandemic. After the first round of Small Business Administration, or SBA, funds for businesses impacted by COVID-19 ran out, Congress approved a new round of funding signed into law by President Trump. The funding window for the new round under the Paycheck Protection Program, which is designed to help small businesses retain workers, opened Monday, April 27th, and must be submitted through an approved lender. Applications previously submitted before the earlier round of funding ran out are also eligible for funding. Many East County small business owners have indicated that they are still waiting on relief funds as the shutdown continues, leaving them without income and worried about their futures. According to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, the Paycheck Protection Act has so far supported over 1.6 million small businesses and help save more than 30 million jobs. The new funding is expected to help tens of millions of additional workers benefit from this critical relief. For more information on the Paycheck Protection Program, including how to apply and find an approved local lender, visit sba.gov/paycheckprotection.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The County Board of Supervisors has voted unanimously to approve a $5 million loan program to help small businesses in the unincorporated areas that have suffered losses because of COVID-19. After more than a month of mandatory shutdowns, promised relief has not arrived for many businesses and individuals. Pam Garcia owns a hair salon in the unincorporated area of El Cajon. Quote, "None of my self-employed people have gotten unemployment. I filed for small business help and have received not even a letter," she posted on Facebook. "I also have not received my stimulus." Thomas Hootman and his wife each own a local small business. He voices similar concerns and frustrations. His Facebook post states, "Our last day of operation for both my wife's business and mine was before March 17th, so no income or assistance since then, and not for lack of trying." Federal funds approved by Congress for Small Business Administration, or SBA, loans in the coronavirus relief package quickly ran out, with even some small businesses that reportedly applied on the first day receiving no funds. Some big banks reportedly gave preference to large companies over small businesses. Some national chain franchisees received money, while mom-and-pop proprietors did not. While a second round of federal funds has been approved, some have voiced frustration as the website quickly crashed earlier this week. So some local governments have launched their own loan programs to save local businesses, including Poway, San Marcos, Coronado, and both the city and county of San Diego locally. The county's loan program will be overseen by the San Diego Foundation. The loans are intended to keep local businesses afloat and allow them to recover quickly once the state's stay-at-home health order is lifted. Unincorporated area businesses that employ fewer than 50 people may qualify for the no or low-interest county loans. Applicants can request up to $50,000 and pay no more than 2% interest for up to 2 years. Businesses that can retain and create jobs will have priority. Applications for the loans could begin in May. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. San Diego County is home to more small family-owned farms under 10 acres than any other county in America. But now with the COVID-19 shutdowns, many local farmers and ranchers who rely on visits from the public and agritourism events are struggling to stay viable. Some, however, are inventing new business models. Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona is offering Zoom Our Zoo, an online interactive animal show. Owners Gil and Nancy Riegler face high costs to feed and care for their camels, exotic performing birds, racing turkeys, and other animals. So now, they're livening up corporate events and entertaining children with virtual birthday parties featuring camel capers and parrot pranks through Zoom for a fee. Nancy Riegler says they're booking Zoom Our Zoo events all over the world. They're also selling camel milk soaps, lotion, and other products, some of them scented with frankincense and myrrh, online. They're not the only ones to find new opportunities amid the COVID-19 chaos. When grocery stores ran out of staples such as eggs and consumers flocked to avoid crowded markets, Frank Hilliker, the owner of Hilliker's Ranch Fresh Eggs in Lakeside, touted drive-up service to buy his farm-fresh whiter brown eggs, local honey, and jams. He also sells baking items such as flour, sugar, butter, and yeast. On Facebook, he posted, "We're so egg-cited that now we're all jamming." He's seen a steady stream of vehicles lining up to pick up his products. But, Hilliker says, his business is still struggling due to losing wholesale business to restaurants. Several local alpaca farms that normally rely on events are selling alpaca wool products online. La Dolce Vita Alpacas in Ramona offers handmade alpaca wool rugs, capes, blankets, and yarn for sale on its website. Atlas Alpacas in Descanso has teamed up with Alpacas of San Diego to offer goods through an online store selling clothing, home accessories, home accents, fleece, fiber, and gifts such as alpaca fleece teddy bears and fluffy alpaca keychains to help customers through today's stressful times. Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Wynola relies heavily on special events during normal times, but they're still selling agricultural items for pickup, including fresh lilacs in season now. To help spread the word, the owners of Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures are also hosting weekly contests with drawings for prizes, encouraging people to post on social media to promote the farm. Other items for sale there include potted lilacs, raspberry plants, vegetable starters, tree seedlings, and succulent plants that people can call ahead and pick up. Vineyard Grant James in Ramona normally relies on visitors to its scenic wine-tasting patio. The winery is still open for curbside pickup of bottle sales and shipping. Recently, the owners offered a special for wine club members, drive-through pickup of discounted wine bottles along with a boxed lunch from Marinade on Main to help out a local restaurant, and they attracted over 250 customers. Keys Creek Lavender Farm and Valley Center has started producing hand sanitizers, which are currently on back order. Their gift shop lists other items available for shipping, such as bath and beauty products, lotions, gift baskets, and lavender sachets. San Diego Seed Company has moved its classes online to teach people how to grow your own gardens while quarantining at home. They sell produce and flower seeds that are regionally adapted, locally grown, and organic, all available online. Rancho San Diego Emus in Spring Valley is selling Emu oil products online, such as sports rubs, Emu blue arthritis creams, decorative blown Emu eggs, and Emu feathers, among other items. Julian Cider Mill is a cider pressing operation with a store in historic Julian selling fresh local cider, preserves, homemade fudge, and other candies, honey, dried fruits, nuts, trial mix, mustards, teas, gluten-free items, pickled products, and seasonal favorites, plus handcrafted things such as Pendleton wool blankets, country-style aprons, candles, and mugs. Now you can call to order those items and pick up curbside or have them shipped to your home. You can also browse their website, which has recipes for apple cider pies and cookies. Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center, founded back in 1921, is set to celebrate its centennial next year. The 100-year-old farm relies heavily on many major events every year, complete with craft fairs, rides, petting zoos, a giant pumpkin patch, and more. But for now, they hope customers will help sustain their farm by ordering items online in their gift store, including nuts, dried fruits, homemade fudge, salsas, soup mixes, snacks, seasonings, teas, and gift items. Sunrise Ranch, that's spelled S-O-N-R-I-S-E, Ranch, based in San Diego, has grass-fed beef, pasture-raised, and antibiotic-free pork, lamb, cage-free poultry meats and eggs, as well as pet foods that can be ordered online and delivered for those who don't want the hassle of grocery store lines. There's currently a waiting list for monthly boxes of meat, but you can still order a whole steer of meat cuts to stock up your freezer during the pandemic. Demand for locally grown meats raised in healthy, humane conditions is apt to increase amid potential commercial meat shortages being predicted due to the shutdown of several major meatpacking plants in the Midwest because of COVID-19 outbreaks among employees at those facilities. Summers Pass Farms in Flint Springs offers items online through its store for now, including handmade herbal soaps and scents such as peppermint and lavender, patchouli and orange, soap sampler kits, and soap-making kits. Many local farms are offering memberships with weekly deliveries of boxes full of fresh fruits and veggies. Some also sell eggs, honey, and other options. East County Magazine has created a directory of local farms selling produce directly to the public on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Local plant nurseries are also vying for business amid the pandemic. Armstrong Garden Centers has 3 locations, including Blossom Valley in East County. They now have call-in and curbside pickup of ornamental plants, flowers, and vegetable seedlings for your garden, allowing ample social distancing, unlike big-box retailers, where lines have been long. Armstrong Garden Centers has also shifted classes online, including virtual instruction in container gardening, growing herbs and vegetables, and beneficial bugs and pest control. Evergreen Nursery has 3 locations, including Blossom Valley out in East County, just east of El Cajon, with 50 acres of plants ranging from fruit trees and vegetable seedlings to flowers and ornamental plants. All are open for business as a critical industry, and their model has always been drive-through for ultimate social distancing. Not every local farm has found a way to sustain sales during the pandemic, however. Oma's Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside, since closing the Van Omering Dairy, owned by the same family 2 years ago, has relied entirely on tourism-related sales. Since then, their only income has been from visitors, and they're losing their entire spring tour season this year. The owner encourages the public to remember them this fall, when pumpkin patch season comes along, and again at Christmas tree time. Julian Mining Company and the Julian Farm also rely heavily on events and tourism, including hosting the annual Julian Gold Rush Days, as well as Pioneer, Native American, Revolutionary and Civil War-themed field trips for school children. They also have a farmer's wife gift shop, you pick apples, petting zoo, and more, but they're all closed right now. For safety's sake, owners of the family-run business have opted to shut down temporarily. On Facebook, they've been chronicling their lives during the shutdown, while they're learning to herd goats, finding four-leaf clovers with their children, and, after the recent heavy rains, trying their hand at gold panning along the creek through their property where Fred Coleman is believed to have found the gold that triggered Julian's gold rush back in the 1870s. The owner posted on Facebook, "Thanks to the coronavirus, we now have a lot more time on our hands. I wonder if we could find enough gold to make up for the mass cancellations and postponements." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
For East County kids who raise pigs, cattle, sheep, or goats through the Future Farmers of America program, a highlight every year is the live auction of their animals at the San Diego County Junior Fair. The Junior Fair has been around since the late 1940s and also provides scholarships from $500 to $5,000 to senior exhibitors through the Investment for Youth Scholarship Fund. But due to the county fair's cancellation amid the COVID-19 quarantine, the Eastern San Diego County Junior Fair's Market Animals Auction will be held virtually online on May 14th. Don Dyer of Alpine, president of the Eastern San Diego County Junior Fair's Lakeside Division, says the judging, typically done in person, will be switched to online video presentations, judging, and sale of the animals. He says the livestock auction has always been supported by the Lakeside community, with residents buying up meat to stock up their freezers. Boulevard resident Terrell Townsend, a junior at Mountain Empire High School, says FFA participants have to see the pandemic and quarantine as something that we overcame. She is preparing a video of her two lambs, Decker and Billy, that she bought for about $400 and has been diligently feeding and exercising. She says she walks her two lambs 2 miles daily and hopes to break even after washing and grooming them for the online presentation. Winning bidders in the May 14th auction will receive their animals on May 18th. Exhibitors ages 9 through 18, all members of Local 4-H and FFA chapters, will receive blue ribbons with belt buckles and champions awarded to winners, some of whom have invested up to $3,000 in their projects. A total of 140 animals will be auctioned. Scholarships for the senior winners are funded through donations to the scholarship fund during the auction and in normal years through sales of candy and ice cream at the fair. The nonprofit East San Diego County Junior Fair is a nonprofit group supported entirely through volunteer fundraising. For more information, you can visit esdcjf.org. That's the East San Diego County Junior Fair. Or you can check the San Diego County Fair website at sdfair.com and click on the exhibits section to find details on the livestock market auction online.
More than a million older Californians are receiving postcards in the mail chock full of information about COVID-19. AARP has teamed up with the California Department of Aging and Governor Gavin Newsom to offer tips on how to get the basics like food and medicine delivered if needed. Patricia Perez, state president of AARP California, says the printed cards are targeted to seniors who may not be comfortable doing things online.
It has been verified and it's simple, and it also includes phone numbers. So yes, websites, if you have access to them, but if you don't, phone numbers where you can call, leave a message, or speak to someone.
The stay-at-home orders have forced the cancellation of family visits, volunteer jobs, exercise classes, and social gatherings. So the postcards encourage older Californians to stay socially connected in order to combat loneliness, anxiety, and depression. Kim McCoy-Wade, director of the California Department of Aging, says the cards also tell people how to report elder abuse or suspected fraud, and they encourage everyone to reach out and make sure parents, grandparents, and older friends are hanging in there during the lockdown.
So we want to encourage folks to make check-in calls, to know about warm lines and hotlines to reach out to, and frankly, stay safe. If wellness checks are needed or if fraud is suspected, we want people to know how to get that information.
The cards also include numbers for the California COVID Information Line, the Alzheimer's Association, the county's local services hotline, and the State Department of Aging. Online, people can also find information at aarp.org/coronavirus. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the People Power Report. Over the years, members of the La Mesa Sunrise Rotary Club have brought fruits and vegetables from their own gardens to their meetings. Members would take the fruit and give a donation to the club foundation, which was used to help eradicate polio around the world. Today, the climate has changed, with the group no longer allowed to meet. So members have shifted their focus to help during the local COVID-19 crisis. Produce for Polio has become produce for pandemic. On April 16th, the group harvested over 500 pounds of citrus fruits from members' gardens and donated the fruit to several organizations, including the Santee Food Bank, La Mesa First United Methodist Church's Fresh Start Program, NOAA Homes, Homeless Encampments, the East County Transitional Living Center, the Bradley Convalescent Home, and La Mesa Senior Citizens. They encourage other Rotary clubs and all people in the community to do likewise, noting that people learn from example. Besides tasting great and filling some nutritional needs, the Produce for Pandemic program builds goodwill and better friendships and is beneficial to all concerned. Club President Jeff Hall says, "No, we can't be physically together, but we can reach out to our neighbors and friends in many other ways such as this." He encourages everyone to reach out to your neighbors and friends who are home alone. Make a phone call, text, or email, or send a homegrown sweet orange. Just reach out and do your part to help in whatever way you can, the Rotary Club president says, whether it be big or small.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Student leaders are calling on college administrators to coordinate a COVID-19 plan to help students across the state. The California Students Higher Education Advocacy Roundtable, or HEART, outlined its priorities in a letter this week to leaders of the UC, CSU, and community college systems. The group is asking that campus services remain open whenever possible for students who have nowhere else to go. Carolyn Tinoco with Student Government at Cal State Dominguez Hills says many need emergency cash grants.
I think students are really having a tough time meeting their basic needs, especially in the CSU. We already know that one out of every four students is food insecure and one out of every 10 is housing insecure.
HEART is asking campuses to waive fees for breaking on-campus leases and work with local landlords to allow students ample time to handle missed rent payments. The group also wants a break on certain college deadlines and help for students who don't have laptops or Wi-Fi. Valerie Johnson, the Transfer Student Affairs Officer and a student at UC Berkeley, says lawmakers should make sure the federal CARES Act money goes to actually help students and then to protect college and university budgets going forward.
One thing that the legislature can do is continue to fund our colleges at the highest capacity possible so that students aren't seeing what they saw during the last time there was an economic downturn and the costs of colleges doubling or tripling.
The group also asks that campuses provide paid leave to students with on-campus jobs, keep undocumented students updated on the types of aid available to them, and make sure that uninsured students can still access on-campus health services. Support for this reporting was provided by the Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for May the 1st, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. President Donald Trump contradicted a rare on-the-record statement from his own intelligence community by claiming Thursday he has seen evidence that gives him a high degree of confidence that the novel coronavirus originated at a laboratory in Wuhan, China, that from CNN. The comments undercut a public statement from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence issued just hours earlier, which stated that no such assessment had been made and continues to rigorously examine whether the outbreak began through contact with infected animals or if it was the result of an accident at a laboratory in Wuhan. As to whether he has seen the evidence, CNN quotes Trump as saying, "Yes, I have." But later, asked why he was confident, Trump said, "I can't tell you that. I'm not allowed to tell you that." Many of New Mexico's immigrants, including some with legal residency, will not receive the federal government's $1,200 stimulus checks or other financial relief. That's according to a new report.
Amber Wallen with New Mexico Voices for Children says the essential but excluded report shows up to 30,000 adult New Mexicans will not get stimulus payments to help them survive the coronavirus pandemic because some members of the household don't have Social Security numbers. She says the health crisis is highlighting the inequality immigrants face.
Our immigrants in our state work, they pay taxes, they create jobs, they spend money in our economy. So what we also know, many immigrants have been left out of relief measures.
Wallen says New Mexico immigrants pay $1 billion in federal, state, and local taxes each year, and many work frontline jobs considered essential. I'm Roz Brown.
About 8% of New Mexico's children have parents who are undocumented, even though many of the children are U.S. citizens. The report was forwarded to state policymakers, but the governor there has not announced any plans that would specifically help undocumented populations. The COVID-19 crisis has brought the issue of absentee voting rules back to the forefront. Now Governor Ned Lamont is facing calls to make the process easier.
Right now, you have to have an excuse to vote by mail, be in the military, be ill, or out of town. John Erlinghauser with AARP Connecticut says the organization has just published an open letter calling on the governor to use his emergency COVID-19 powers to permit no-excuse absentee voting in the August primary.
It's for the safety and security of workers in the polling places. The majority of them are 75 years older, as well as for all voters, especially those that are older who are at a higher risk for dying from coronavirus.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
AARP Connecticut is also promoting a constitutional amendment in the state that would allow for early voting. A resolution to put on the ballot passed last year and has to pass again this year. If enacted, it would take effect in 2022. Connecticut is one of only 12 states that prohibits early voting. This is PNS. Advocates for end-of-life care options have written a letter asking the Federal Health and Human Services Secretary to reverse a waiver of a federal law that requires patients to be informed of their legal right to refuse treatment.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services issued the waiver last week. According to Kim Callanan, president and CEO of the organization Compassion and Choices, research shows that when given the option, about 80% of seriously ill patients will refuse invasive medical procedures, but with the waiver in effect, fewer people will be asked.
It's going to make healthcare providers ration care for their patients rather than empowering patients to make decisions and allowing their decisions to be paramount in end-of-life planning.
She strongly recommends that everyone fill out the state form specifying advanced directives for end-of-life care. The forms are available online at compassionandchoices.org. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
And Virginia's new Clean Energy Economy Act is paving the way for a burst of solar installations in the Commonwealth, but the United Nations has designated one of these solar providers as a human rights violator.
Caden Energix plans to build 8 solar installations in Virginia worth $500 million, according to Grant Smith with the Institute for Research on Middle East Policy. He says the company recently appeared on a list from the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights for using its solar resources in occupied Palestinian territory for foreign gain.
The surrounding community has been deprived of these resources. They're not allowed to even operate their own solar energy. They can't even buy solar energy from this Energix solar field, which was built on their land.
He says no city or town in Virginia where Energix is building had been made aware of the company's overseas background. Energix officials did not respond by deadline to a request for comment. I'm Diane Bernard.
Finally, Eric Tegedoff reports the country's response to the coronavirus pandemic could provide valuable insights on how to curb climate change effects.
Director of the Montana State University Institute on Ecosystems, Bruce Maxwell, says the first step is having accurate information to work with, such as testing in the case of coronavirus. On the climate change front, he says there are major gaps in our knowledge, which will hinder our response.
We don't even have a mechanism to really dedicate ourselves to understanding what the recent historic trends have been. So we're not prepared. It's like saying, oh, we have a pandemic, but we have no doctors.
Maxwell says, unlike COVID-19, the effects of climate change are here to stay. He says preparation will involve adapting to a warmer planet.
Here's hoping you keep a safe distance and stay healthy this weekend. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. California's Fish and Game Commission has voted unanimously to support a review to determine if mountain lions in parts of Southern California and the Central Coast should be protected under the state's Endangered Species Act. The action comes in response to a petition from the Center for Biological Diversity and the Mountain Lion Foundation. California's Fish and Game Department has also found such protections may be warranted. The Endangered Species Act protections will apply to mountain lions while the review is underway over the next year. Tiffany Yap, a biologist at the Center for Biological Diversity, calls the action a historic moment for California's big cat and rich biodiversity. With state protections, she says, we could start reversing course to save our mountain lions. Genetic isolation due to roads and development threatens the health of the 6 populations of mountain lions, also called pumas or cougars, that were included in the petition. Despite a ban on sport hunting lions for over 30 years in California, some have low survival rates due to high levels of human-caused mortalities. Major threats include car strikes, poisonings, and sanctioned depredation kills. Researchers with the National Park Service, UC Davis, and UCLA warn that if nothing is done to improve connectivity for these wide-ranging carnivores, some populations could go extinct in 50 years. State protections under the Act will help address threats these lions face. Local authorities will need to coordinate with state wildlife experts to assure that approved development projects account for mountain lion connectivity. In addition, state agencies will have a legal mandate to protect mountain lions. This could include building wildlife crossings over freeways, which have been shown to help maintain wildlife movement and reduce wildlife vehicle collisions. State officials will also need to reevaluate the use of deadly rat poisons in mountain lion habitat, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife will be able to develop and implement a recovery plan to help mountain lions come roaring back.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.